This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 444 for December 7th of 2018. A hardcore gearhead buys a Tesla Model 3. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
All right, everybody, welcome to Autoline After Hours. Gary, how you doing?
Good. So we're back in the studio.
I like being in the studio. It was awesome being at the LA show. That was a great show.
If anybody didn't see that show last week, Mark Allen, head of design for Jeep, Scott Tallon, head of marketing, Gladiator, and we had Lauren Fix and Eric Noble in the car lab. It was a great show.
It was a great show. Hey, we got to let everybody know that on this show, we've got Jack Keebler from Keebler Auto.
Thank you, John.
Consulting firm, more sort of less, right? Keebler Auto.
Cool. Louise.
Yeah.
A little special treatment, a little insight.
Cool. And our special guest for today has also been on the show before, but not, never.
He was a special guest.
Had a very different car in here the last time I was.
You had your race car.
I had my race car in here.
Your Porsche.
Which we could barely get in over the 4-inch lip.
Yeah.
Getting it's so low.
Didn't tear anything off.
Yeah. From Lola to Tesla.
But today you've got your Tesla Model 3 here.
Yep.
And, hey, we're going to be talking all about Tesla Model 3, take a deep dive into this car, and try to figure out why the heck would Henry Payne buy one of these things. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, shoot us an email and send it to viewermail@autoline.tv. Or you can give us a call. We'll take a phone number as well. And that number is 620-288-6546. And we'll try to get your questions here on the air. But, yeah, Henry, let's go back to you and the Model 3. You're a total gearhead.
Yeah.
You're a race car driver.
Race cars, love cars.
You've got gasoline in your veins.
Oh, yeah, oil in the blood.
Goddamn electric car. What's this all about?
it's different, and that's the point. It's just, it is so different than any car I've ever driven. And I'm not a global warming believer. I've grown up at the racetrack.
You didn't do this for environmental reasons.
I'm not a greenie, but since driving the first Model S Tesla I got into a few years ago, there is nothing like these vehicles on the market. And there is also no other viable auto startup in my lifetime. And I, when they came out with the Model 3, which is in my strike zone.
Affordable.
Model S and X are way too expensive for me, but the Model 3 was affordable to me. And when Tesla got flooded with 400,000 orders in April 2016, I thought, I need to be part of this story. I mean, I love the car, I want the car, but as a journalist, I want to be on this journey. And I want to see if this startup automaker can produce what's promised at this kind of volume, and it is not disappointed. It is not only the car has lived up to its expectations, but it's been a hell of a ride.
Okay, Henry, it seems to me that over the last year and a half or so, when we've had you sitting in that chair, you've said, "Well, I haven't gotten it yet. So tell us about your experience in terms of when you place the order, and then when you were able to configure the car, and then tell us how you configured it.
Yeah, because you go back to April 2016. That's when I put down my $1,000, and then it's supposed to come in late 2017 when they're producing whatever the promise was, 10,000 a week at the end of 2017. That didn't happen. Guys around here started to. Who already had existing Tesla customers who had S's and X's. I knew a couple of them. They started getting the car in February of 2018 of this year. And that's the first one I drove, and it knocked my socks off. You know, brilliant car. But then I just waited and waited. And you hear nothing from Tesla. And you go on the forums and you talk to folks who are getting them. What's the experience like? How long is the wait? And I'm hearing, okay, it's a month. You'll get a notice and say, here's when you configure it, and then you'll get the car in a month after that. And that was the case with the early deliveries in February. Well, I finally got my configuration, which is another $2,500 down, in June. And I configured the car, big battery, rear-wheel drive, obsidian black paint. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to get it in a month. I go online, the delivery says, October to December is your window. That's a long time. And it's also winter. You know, I want to take this thing to the track, you know, when I get it. And so I learned you could communicate to Las Vegas. Las Vegas was sort of order central for Tesla. So I did get somebody I could talk to, and they said, yeah, be patient. We got a lot of orders to fill. You're in the Midwest. Most of the deliveries are in California. It's going to take longer for you in the Midwest.
So was that an email address or a phone call?
That's phone call.
Okay.
And I also knew that I'd have to take delivery in Cleveland because Michigan's legislature, in its wisdom, has decided that Tesla can't have dealerships here. So I made contact with a Cleveland dealer also. And over time, that window finally firmed up, and I got the car in late October.
Okay, so you've got this car. You test drive everything.
Yep.
What makes this special for you?
Well, I like to make the analogy to people that it's like being an early Apple adopter in the MS-DOS computer world. This is a different operating system. You get into the car, and it is different to operate, much like Apple computers were with a graphical interface compared to MS-DOS. And lo and behold, the industry had started to adopt some of Apple's innovations. You're seeing bigger screens coming into cars. You see those in the Ram trucks. This cool graphic interface that Tesla has had, going back to the S and X, where they show your car right in front of you all the time, and they're always informing you what's around you. Mazda has started to do that. So it's interesting to see other automakers start to adapt some of this operating system, but it's a totally different operating system. You get in the car. John and I drove it before the program. It is an absolutely minimalist space. Everything runs through the screen. There are two buttons on the steering wheel that operate everything, from mirrors to volume to navigation, voice controls. Most everything else is automatic, auto windshield wipers, auto lights. So you don't find yourself reaching for buttons because
there's
so much of the car
model
is automatic.
Criticism, though, hasn't there, that some of the operating interface is like a menu below, you have to kind of get into the screen and
but
find
that's not
things.
The case because this is the other analogy I make to the computer world. The first is the Apple analogy. The second is the phone. We deal with these phones day in and day out, and this thing works like a phone. You just talk to it. You don't, you know, you wind up using my phone a lot. I'm just saying, ask Google, or if you're an Apple customer, you're saying, talking to Siri.
Can you move your mirrors with your voice?
Nope, can't do that. Yeah, so there's certain things you got to do. You got to set
right
off the bat, and don't do that while you're traveling.
Right.
But the nav system, which by and large I find abysmal in most cars these days, is as intuitive as your phone. Coming out here today from Bloomfield Hills, I said, "Take me to Blue Sky Productions." I didn't have to tell it was in Farmington Hills.
Cool.
It was just like my phone. Take me to Blue Sky Productions. Bang, it puts it on the screen, and off we go. So,
but how does
it's very hands off. Well, and so is
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, as a car nut, that's the thing that first appealed to me way back when I got into Model S. I mean, the thing weighs, Model S's weigh 4,600, 4,800 pounds. You look at the spec on the sheet and you say it weighs as much as a base F-150. And then you get into it, all of that weight is in the bottom. The Model S has the same
low CG.
CG as a Toyota 86. That's a lower CG than
that's center of gravity for those of you at home.
Yeah, center of gravity. So these battery-powered cars handle, you know, all of them do. Chevy Bolt, which is a higher off the ground, this car, it handles pretty well. But you put that battery in the floor of a sedan, and the thing just handles. It's rear-wheel drive. You know, it's an electric motor.
And you're a rear-drive guy.
I'm a rear-drive guy, so you can throw it into a corner. It's got good neutral handling. Has push at the limit.
It should.
Yeah, yeah. And the first thing I did when I got the cars, I ran up to M1 Concourse and did some test laps. And what was formidable about that idea was Tesla Model S's are famous for shutting down overheating very quickly. Whether they're at Laguna Seca,
battery overheating.
Yeah, or at VIR, they overheat. They go into limp mode.
But this is people who are driving them in race conditions,
right,
not people who are going to work.
Right. But that's my envelope. If I didn't buy this car,
it's how you drive to work.
I was going to buy
Mount Jefferson.
No, like, but I'm a track
vigorously.
I'm a track day guy.
You would have bought a BMW M.
BMW M2, same price. So I bought this instead of an M2. So my car has to have that envelope, and it's fun on the track. It's a good handling thing, and the battery lasts.
As you mentioned, let me drive it before the show. It's starting to snow here. The roads are a little bit slick. We came down this one sort of clover leaf thing downhill, and the car started sliding a little bit.
Yeah.
Does it not have electronic stability control?
Mm. It does.
But there's got to be some slop in it that it allows you to slide this car around a bit.
That's right. Yeah, it seems to be pretty liberal in that regard.
You don't like that, Henry.
And there's a, right, in the classic sense of the word.
Tail out.
And there's not a button for it. You know, you don't turn off traction control. That's sort of built into the system. Hmm. But that is on the margin. That's a limitation of this car. If you really want to turn off all the nannies and really track a Tesla Model 3, you'll buy the performance version. The performance version gives you multiple steps in turning
and that's
off
all-wheel
the nanny
drive,
control.
Right?
That's
yes.
An all-wheel drive car.
So how is this one on the track?
It's good. I mean, what's different?
And what I mean too is you get more than one lap out of it.
Yeah, it's the brakes that fail because being a regen car, Tesla has designed this car for the brakes to work with the electric motor.
So they're kind of undersized.
So the brakes are undersized. Hmm. So you run out of brakes.
In fact, I'm looking at the rotors right now, and you're right.
Yeah.
Those are pretty small rotors by today's standard.
Yeah.
The performance model, though, right, it stopped in 99 feet from 60 miles an hour.
Which is awfully good.
That's
right?
A stellar stop.
Anything under 100 is
absolutely
good. But I'll bet it's got bigger rotors than this one.
It might.
Totally different rotor.
Is it?
And brake package.
Was that the car, though? Remember that they had to do an over-the-air update because Consumer Reports nicked them because the braking was... Or was that the Model S or was that the
long.
Model 3?
No.
That's this car.
Yeah,
that
the braking was long, and they did an over-the-air update.
Yeah, and then he's just like, I'll take care of that.
They brake stopping distance.
Yeah, just like, fine.
While it was at, you know, Consumer Reports.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what's different on the track, of course, is you're just, you know, you're hammering it on the track, and it makes no noise.
Right.
And you're getting instant torque everywhere whenever you press the pedal. The thing makes no noise. So that's weird. Hmm. And the other thing, it's surprisingly easy to get used to, is everything is in this screen to the right of the steering wheel. There is nothing in front of you. There's no heads-up display. There's no instrument panel. But if you're just running a one-speed transmission and electric motor, you don't need anything in front of you.
Hmm. So I was surprised. How many tickets do you have?
Huh?
How many tickets did you get in this? Sorry, officer, I couldn't see the screen.
I try to be careful. Yeah, try to have
but
my
right.
fun
you
on.
You don't need a tachometer. You don't need oil pressure. None of that.
So I found on the track, frankly, I was surprised how it didn't bother me at all. There was no information I needed other than speed. You don't really need that.
Do you have any hard numbers on the car? 0 to 60 or any of that?
I haven't done personal tests. Okay. Manufacturer is 5.1.
Right, and the performance version is 3.3.
Yeah,
0 to 60.
That's quick.
That's spectacular.
Sizzling.
And again, the car is pretty heavy. I mean, I don't know what this weighs, but
3,800.
The all-wheel drive version is 4,080.
Right.
All right.
It's
pretty heavy.
So, Henry, you said you configured this with the large battery and the paint. Now, is rear-wheel drive an option, or is that the standard build?
So the standard build, which has not been built yet.
Okay.
Right. That's $35,000.
It's a $35,000 car.
Okay, the non-existent one.
That's vaporware. Yeah.
The hen's teeth one.
Yeah, with 18-inch wheels and a 240-mile range battery. That does not exist. And I imagine that's a substantial number of those 450,000 orders made back in 2016.
It just makes sense.
Right. But guess what just happened on December 1st? The $7,500 tax credit ran out.
Right.
And that is a much bigger deal to people buying a $35,000 car.
Sure. And remember, it only goes to half, right? So
yeah, they still have...
They go another 6 months. I thought it goes to half in 6 months, and then after 6 months after that, it
phases out. It was a year, and then a year, and then a year.
It tapers off.
Yeah. It tapers off, right.
Right.
But again, is the $35,000 car a front drive car, or are they all rear drive?
No, they're rear drive.
Right.
Rear drive.
Okay. All rear drive, yeah.
So you get the performance that's all wheel drive.
Right.
It's all wheel. But and again, as an enthusiast, I like that. It's a rear wheel drive base car. But so for me and everybody else in the market currently, you start with a big battery, 310, which in my opinion is a must.
310 is 310 miles range? Is that what you're talking
about?
It's a
75 kilowatt hour battery, I think.
That's about 80. Yeah, EPA puts it at 80.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so the reason I'm asking is because the difference between your car and a car with a normal battery is just the size of the battery. The motor is the same. The drive setup is the same. And here you are talking about taking this thing on the track. And wasn't it basically engineered to be a car that would be like a city commuter car? I mean, did you take the Bolt on the track? Let's just put it that way.
No, this is a performance luxury car. This competes in the same space as the Audi A4, the BMW 3 Series, a Subaru WRX, for God's sake, is in the same price point. So,
C-Class, BMW 3.
And I've tracked all those cars.
So what's a Bolt cost?
35 to 41.
Right.
I want to say 37 is the base. I thought.
Right.
All right. So take the big battery out.
The Chevy Bolt doesn't sell because it is not a luxury brand. Nobody's going to buy a $40,000 Chevy compact. There are a lot of luxury compacts: BMW 3, Audi A4, Alfa Giulia, all of which I've tracked. This car, to me, has to meet that track standard.
But to your earlier point, Henry, I mean, the Bolts that have been sold so far, they have that $7,500
correct,
incentive on them. That's also going away for General Motors. They're also approaching
the
ceiling.
Yeah.
So with all those cars you just named, Henry, how does this stack up?
It's right there.
In what way? Go through, not just the performance, but, the amenities or just the feel of the car, too.
Yeah, it's very well put together.
It feels substantial.
It feels substantial. I mean, you get into it, the steering is heavy, feels rooted. You can throw it into a corner. It's very neutral, you can toss it around on the limit. It has more push than a BMW 3. I'd say it's similar push to an Audi A4, which is more of a front-wheel drive-based platform. But with all that battery in the bottom, it's substantially heavier than a 3 Series, probably 400 pounds heavier than a 3 Series, and yet feels every bit as nimble because it's got such a low Porsche Cayman-like center of gravity.
And it's faster than the 3 Series.
I don't know about that.
Have you timed these?
No, I haven't done lap times.
No lap times, okay.
Yeah, and the battery, I did six hard laps with it. Battery's okay, but the brakes go away. You get a brake warning. So
the other issue,
I got to put some good race pads in it.
Yeah, I mean the other issue that'll come up, on a car that's heavier than other vehicles in its class will also be a tire contact patch. you know, you're putting, you're stressing that tire contact patch with a heavier car. 400 or 500 pounds, that's a lot. You know, that would tend to suggest the lap times wouldn't be at the same level as, say, a 3,200-pound, you know, rear-drive German, you know, premium car.
Right. And that, and so that's my first investment in this car, is going to be better tires and better pads. Yeah. I got to get some good Hawk pads, primarily, and better tires. And then you're more on par, you know, with, a Giulia or some of the better performance models in the class.
How about the interior? Does that stand up in terms of luxury? Or
It does to me. And, again, just because it's so different. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the interior.
Starkly simple.
It is starkly simple.
We've got a picture of it up there now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing but that screen and, you know, two stocks off the steering wheel.
Right.
Yeah. So, it's just different. I mean, you know, it's leather. The wood seems to be nice. But, frankly, even if that was all cloth, it still would be worth it to me. It's just such a different environment.
Any rattles or?
No rattles, but.
Okay, here we go.
But it has issues. And, I think part of that is it's a startup automaker that's not experienced in manufacturing the way we're used to here in a manufacturing town. But I think also Silicon Valley looks at it as this. It's a phone. If it's got a problem, we'll update it, you know? I mean, I've had two major software updates in 1 month.
On this?
On this car. So I think they look at it as a work in progress. To make the car look nice for this show, I took it into a car wash yesterday. And I came out of that car wash and had problems. I think they're sensor related. But two of the neat things that this car does, again, different than anything else in the market, is that it'll autopilot you to your destination. It'll automatically change lanes. It's a very good autopilot system, and you can also basically walk it like a dog using there's an app. You interact with this car a lot.
You can stand outside the car and operate the car.
Stand outside the car and
tell it to follow you.
Park it in a narrow garage or something like that.
Yeah, and that's its primary purpose. You can pull it out of a tight space. And I wanted to come over here and demonstrate that, you know, because this is a tight garage to get into.
Right.
And summon it in here, but those two features—the auto lane change and the summon—went away.
Stop working
after the car wash. So a sensor got not knocked or something.
Huh.
So you said
it's
you
glitchy.
Had two major updates to your software. So some dude come over to your house with a USB drive or
over the air.
Just
like your phone.
So did you know it was going to come?
Yeah, did they alert you to that?
They alert
they
you. Yeah,
okay.
they'll say.
So they say don't drive the car for 4 hours or something like that?
No, again, it's like your phone. The screen, a message will come on the screen, says we got an update for you. Do you want it now? Do you want to schedule it for midnight? So it's just like your phone. And so I schedule mine for midnight, just like I usually charge the car at home. That's another expense. I've put $2,000 into a 240 in my garage, so I can charge off peak after midnight. But the software updates came down at night, and the car was different when I came in the next day.
What did you notice?
Well, the auto lane change, it's called Navigate on Autopilot, is the most recent noticeable change, and it's pretty slick. You set your path, for example, to Blue Sky Productions, and the car will talk you through it. Okay, you're a mile away. Change lanes, and you pull the stock, and it automatically changes to the nearest lane. It also there's no bliss on this car. Everything, again, is in the center screen. So
the blind spot warning system.
Right. So if there's a car right next to you, it'll light up red the line that's ahead of you in this car graphic that always sits there on the screen. So that updated. So you get cool little updates like that. But it's also annoying like a phone, and it takes away things that you've gotten used to. You know, you're just getting used to something in the phone that's really cool, and you say, well, why'd you guys take that away with the latest update? A feature I really liked was when I come into, when you park into a garage, for example, the car will show sort of a force field around it and tell you exactly how many inches you are away from the object you're approaching. So I come into my garage and I can literally get within 1 inch of the bench in front of my car. They took that away. Now you can only back up and see how many inches you are from a product. So
how relaxed are you behind the wheel when it's an autopilot? Are you pretty? You're not like reading a book or looking at an iPad. You're still pretty focused on.
Yeah,
driving,
you're engaged,
right?
and the lawyers are getting more involved. I mean, Tesla's right. Obviously had some horrific.
Tesla's actually backed away from what they originally introduced.
Okay,
it's you are forced to be more engaged than
well,
the
also
earlier.
Just holding onto the steering wheel now. I don't think originally right. You had to do that, right?
Yeah, the early Model S's
you could get into the back seat.
Yeah, like, eat a hot dog and watch YouTube.
No,
that's right. Yeah. Until you hit a barrier.
Yeah.
And then
sue.
and the original Model S's weren't geofenced either. So you'd be...
Anywhere.
You know, right. I'd be out in California driving 101 at 80 miles an hour, get off of an exit.
Yeah.
It'd just keep you driving at 80 miles an hour off the exit. with this new autopilot system, as soon as you come off the highway, it adapts to the speed limit. So it'll go 80 to 45 to 35. The car will literally back down all by itself as it comes off the freeway. So it's much smarter, more geofenced in that sense.
So Henry, as John said, you drive everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love everything too. There's so many good cars.
Okay, but I mean, how do you feel about the car? I mean, because you're obviously more discerning than most people are in terms of, you know, your base of knowledge is just tremendous. I mean, are you pleased with this car?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other big learning curve, and this isn't just to Tesla, is driving an electric car. I mean, one of the other reasons I wanted to buy this car was I wanted to live with an electric car. Yeah, I mean, we all drive them in our jobs. We get them for a week, or we go on a test drive and drive them for a day, and we kind of learn the good parts of an electric car, the torque and the quiet, but it is a pain to live with. And I'll give you a good example. This week, I went to Battle Creek for a GMC program, and Battle Creek is 110 miles away. I'm driving this car in the Midwest, not in California, where most auto reviewers are and where most Teslas have been test driven.
Mild weather,
no snow.
Right.
So 110 miles away. And so I charge this car to full capacity, usually for proper battery management, which is another thing you have to learn with an electric car, is you got to keep the charge between 20 and 80%. You don't want to discharge the battery. You don't want to overcharge it because that hurts battery life. So usually you're keeping the car charged between 20 and 80%. Well, I charged it all the way to 310 because I wanted to get to Battle Creek and back. I get into the car.
With some margin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and there's also margin, right? Because
right.
There's not that many places you can recharge. And Tesla's been very smart with their supercharger network in that way. I get in the car, and the car always, I set in my destination. I'm going to Eaton Proving Grounds in Battle Creek. And the car will always predict how much battery life you will have when you get to your destination. It said 48%.
Uh-oh.
I said,
that's not enough.
How do I only have 48% of battery life left when I'm only going 110 miles.
Right.
And what the car knows... And
oh, the
accurate,
outside temperature and everything.
Is that the temp... Is that this,
so
the,
heated seats, the keeping the interior warm,
yeah.
Defrost, wipers.
Yeah.
Your heavy foot.
Yeah, what about
no,
that?
No, I went speed limit. I mean, all it knows is I'm going to go speed limit. I went speed limit 70 miles per hour out 23 to I-94, and sure enough, I got only 70% of predicted range going out there in 30-degree weather.
Sure.
Weather is a huge degrader of batteries.
Somebody said that batteries like temperatures the same as human beings do, right around 70, 72 degrees. They're happy, we're happy. Colder than that, hotter than that, you've got an issue.
Right.
You lose range.
Yeah. And the lead foot stuff I'm used to. I know lead foot degrades.
Sure.
But just because the temperature changes, now all of a sudden my battery strategy has to change. So I say, well, I'm not going to be able to make it home from Battle Creek. So I'm going to go up here to the supercharger at Battle Creek. There are two superchargers between me and home, Battle Creek and Ann Arbor.
Is it indicating that, by the way, on the screen?
Tells you all that. Yeah.
Cool.
And so I go to the Battle Creek supercharger. The system is good. It says there are 8 stalls in Battle Creek. There are 6 available.
Wow.
So it gives you all that detail in the screen. I go up to Battle Creek, and I sit there for 45 minutes for another 100 miles of charge so I can get home comfortably.
Smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But again, you got to build in that margin.
Right.
And you're in a gas car, and the office says, hey, Henry, I hear you're out near Kalamazoo today. There's a fire in Kalamazoo. Can you cover it? I can't say to the office, yeah, my car's not going to get me there.
I'm sitting here for 45 minutes getting charged.
So I feel you got to have the margin, and that's why you buy
an Uber.
That's why you buy the 300-mile battery, not the 240.
Is that or an electric scooter in the trunk?
Yeah, that's right. So to me, you got to build that margin in.
Hey, we got a number of questions coming in here. We'll try to handle them as rapid fire as possible. Bill One wants to know, what about bad roads, potholes? How's the car handle it?
Well, and it handles that fine as long as you're paying attention. To me, that's an issue with autopilot. I mean, it is possible to drive this car.
So does it drive lane center, Henry?
Yeah, it's really good.
So it doesn't bounce off the lines or any of that nonsense.
Yeah, it's really good.
Cool. But if there's a pothole, it'll run right through the pothole.
And so when I need to check a text or something on my phone, you double pull the stalk. It goes into autopilot, and it works really well. I mean, you're in your lane. You're adaptive cruise control.
Right.
So, you know, you can be a little unattentive, but you're in Michigan. You got some of the worst roads in the country. I think that's an issue with any autopilot.
Right.
Is that cars cannot see potholes. In fact, I was in a different car. Yeah.
Send Tesla Nino.
No, Lincoln on the new Aviator is scanning the road ahead for potholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's huge. Because I was in a
Detroit-based car company.
Yeah.
and by the way, Henry, you're in Michigan. It's illegal to text and drive. I just want you to know that. So.
Appreciate that, Gary. Yeah. And watch what I say on the air.
Yeah.
But I was in another car on adaptive cruise not too long ago going downtown. A ladder fell off the truck in front of me.
Wow.
I took avoiding action. The car never saw it.
Right.
So.
Wow. Okay, here's another. This is a comment. Jose C. says, I'm in the Seattle area, and there's a bunch of Model 3s driving in the rain.
I was just in Seattle.
Bob Wilson asks, are you planning a low-weight, low-polar moment wheels and possibly a brake upgrade? You mentioned pads.
Yeah, so I'm in the market for Hawk pads, but this car is so new in the market. I called Tire Rack, right. which is they're expert on all things, and they don't have Hawk pads for a Tesla Model 3 yet. So I'm kind of going on some of the enthusiast forums, and they're talking about, you know, you can take Camaro pads; they'll fit pretty well. Mm. So put some Camaro Hawks in there. There are also some specialty pad makers, so I may do that as well. But that's a market. Mm. There's some entrepreneur out there right now, guarantee you, who's making performance pads for this car.
Joey's cleaning lady says, does Tesla recommend auto car washes for the Model 3?
Yeah, I tell you, the next time I wash this car, I'm going to hand wash it because I took it through Jack's, which is a premium car wash. But, the car was not happy.
Is there a neutral?
Yes, there is a neutral. Put a neutral, you put the left wheel on the rail, and it goes through. But, you know, those car washes douse the car, and they got all kinds of jalopies running over the car, and I think something knocked a sensor. That's why I've lost these couple abilities.
We got a phone call, too. Carmen, let's bring in the phone call.
This is Clem Zarovsky in Belmont, Pennsylvania. I making an update, electronic deficiencies or problems over the air. But since they don't have any dealers, how do you get the car repaired if it needs a hand-on repair?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because my dealer is in Cleveland. My service center is in Cleveland.
Over the air update will not change the windshield wipers.
Right.
So I've got a call into that service center, and it's a multi-step process. Again, the way Tesla looks at these cars, they're phones. So I have had glitches with this car before. Most recently, it stopped reading my phone. I couldn't find the app, and you can interact with this car quite a bit remotely by app. All of a sudden, it couldn't find my phone, my app. So I just rebooted the car. You press both of the
Control-Alt-Delete.
Yeah, it's Control-Alt-Delete.
Not while you're rolling, right?
Yeah, it's just like your phone. It's like a computer. You reboot it, and that
the lights flick off and come back on.
Yeah, and that did the trick, and I was able to connect to my phone after that. Then there is also a hard reboot, which I suspect is what I'll have to do to fix this.
You drop the battery out, or
no? You literally reboot all the systems in the car.
Right.
But I don't want to do that until I talk to the service center, so I've got to call into them. If that doesn't fix the problem, then they'll send a mobile van from Cleveland to my house.
That's pretty good.
And try to fix the car. And if that doesn't work, they'll come pick it up.
But if you lived in Cleveland, it wouldn't be a problem, right?
I mean, yeah, so I should just move to Cleveland?
Yeah.
Okay. They allow you to text and drive in Ohio?
Hold on. We got to take a quick commercial break because we're going to give a shout out to our good friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Five.
Okay, we're back. Talking about all things automotive with Henry Payne and Jack Keebler. And do we have a number?
We do, but we don't have a graphic. The graphic wasn't made.
Okay.
So this is...
That's okay. We can do it. So this is the part where Dr. Data makes his appearance.
All right, so this is an astonishing number that I found. And so I'll give you guys a clue. So we just had sales this week, right?
Sales from November.
Sales from November came out, and so then I was just sort of thinking about things related to vehicle sales. So this has to do with vehicle sale. So the number is $13,796. That's $13,796.
That's the number.
That's the number.
So that's the lowest. I'm guessing. I'll guess first. I guess we can't. Can I guess?
You can guess.
That's the lowest MSRP available in America.
No.
Oh.
It may be.
For a snowmobile.
It may be.
That's the average sale. So the average price of a new car is $35,000. Yes. The average price of a used car is $13,700.
That's a good one, but that's not the number either. Jack, it's up to you. So this has to do with the purchase of a vehicle. We're right in that regard.
Right. Sounds like option prices for, say, a Jeep owner.
You were getting warm there. Okay.
Go ahead.
This is the thing. Okay. So if you were to go out, and this is according to our friends at trucks.com, if you were to go out and buy a brand new Nissan Titan XD, you can get $13,796 off of the price of that vehicle. Okay.
Wow.
Now, so this means that there's like...
That's the factory incentive?
It's dealer cash is $3,100. There's a cash back of $7,500.
Wow.
There's a chrome package of $2,200 and a conquest of $1,000. Okay. So the most expensive MSRP the most expensive MSRP I could find on the media site for a XD with a diesel was $50,940. So $13,796 to
a little help.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then in case anybody's wondering, there were only 3,845 Titans sold in November.
Wow, that's nothing.
The incentives, though,
that's why.
The incentives on full-size trucks have started to really creep up there.
There were a lot for, everyone.
Well, everybody was kind of dusting out, those 18s because they've got, got a new Ram, we've got a new Silverado.
Yeah, new Sierra.
New Sierra. So, yeah, there's been a little push.
The end of the year, everybody wants to make that 17 million number. Here's a Dr. Data. So, on the Tesla... So 30-degree weather, go on the speed limit, you're at 70% of battery range, predicted battery range. What if you go 80 miles an hour in 30-degree weather, which is pretty much the average speed of Michigan highways?
Aerodynamic resistance goes up exponentially at speed. So it's not like you're just getting another 10 miles an hour out of it. You're probably getting, another 20% more? Air resistance, wind resistance.
Yes.
So I don't know.
So Henry, what's the logarithmic scale on this?
Another 10%.
10% down.
If you're going flow of traffic on I-96 at 80 miles an hour in 30-degree weather, you're going to get 60% of predicted battery range.
That's a lot less than
310 miles.
See, but you know what that 70 miles an hour is saving you, Henry? A ticket.
Not admission.
I don't know. I might get
Everybody
run over by a semi.
I like flying inside the envelope. I'm like that 67-mile-an-hour guy. Let the other people kind of flow around you
The cops don't even look up from whatever they're reading when the radar gun goes off at 80. They don't care.
Yep.
It travels pretty quickly out there.
Yeah. Okay, we've talked all kinds of things about Tesla and the Model 3, Gary, but I know you've got other things that you think that we need to be looking at.
Well, since we're talking about advanced technology vehicles, I thought it was rather interesting that yesterday Waymo 1 launched in Arizona. And so you're talking about your phone before, so there is a Waymo 1 app for these early riders, people that had been in the Waymo program in the Chandler, Arizona, greater Chandler area, and they have access to this, and this is about 400 people. And it just sounds like the Uber sort of a situation. And now there is still a safety driver in it for now.
Right.
But they're basically saying that, if this all works out, that will go away.
So this is level 4 geofenced.
Right.
Right. Right.
And I was reading,
heavily geofenced.
Right.
Yeah, but it's still a big. In their pilot program, it was like 600 square miles. It was a big area.
Yeah, but there are neighborhoods in Arizona, for whatever reason, you don't go into those. They're not inside the geofenced area.
And why do you think that is?
Complicated traffic situation or something like that. Yeah.
So there was a quote from this guy who wrote a piece on The Verge, and this is one of the best quotes I've read about an automated vehicle at all. This guy says, this is quoting Andrew Hawkins, The Verge, "I'm an experienced Waymo rider, 3 trips and counting, but this one feels more mature. Before, it felt like you were being driven by your half-blind grandmother.
Ouch.
But now riding feels mostly normal." So he took the ride yesterday, and so his half
over the air update.
His half line
grandmother
is gone. But
absolutely.
All right. So we have that. Okay. So that happens yesterday, and then we heard late last week that Dan Amen, who was the president of General Motors, is now going to become the CEO of Cruise Automation, their automated vehicle company. So I ask you guys: Are is this going to be real? Automated driving?
GM thinks so.
And Waymo thinks so.
Right.
It is.
What do you think, Jack?
I'm cautious. I'm cautious about it. I mean, those accidents that happened, those are real. And I'm a little concerned with all these pilot programs that are out on the street already because these systems don't see everything. And the software has not been written yet for every traffic scenario. So I kind of like the idea that the system sort of shuts down and they've still got their safety driver. I think that's the right thing to do. I am a little concerned about those remote drivers. I forget what that's called, ghost driving or whatever. They're at a remote location and they're supposed to take over the car if a problem occurs. I think that there's just too much lag time with those type of systems. So,
see, I think you're talking.
I consider it all to be progress going in the right direction.
See, the way I look at it is the accidents have largely come from two companies, Uber and Tesla.
That's true.
You haven't heard about accidents, no fatalities at all, with Cruise Automation, with Waymo and the like. And that's the difference that I see is that some companies, especially automotive companies, traditional automakers, are taking the very belt and suspenders safety approach. Others like Waymo with a bunch of automotive people running them like John Krafcheck. And at Aurora, you've got Chris Urmson, who's a very safety-focused guy. They're not getting in accidents. So you got, I think we all got to be very careful when we say, oh, this technology is not ready. No, the technology is ready. Some companies just are playing our catch-up a little too fast.
Yeah. But I still think I think it's still heavily geofenced. I've got family working in this space, and they say true autonomous is a long way away. I mean, the world is really complicated when you, particularly when you get outside of Phoenix and San Francisco, and you start dealing with snow and rain and bad roads, i.e., Michigan. And that's why I find it fascinating that Uber continues to test in Pittsburgh.
They're not. They're not testing in Pittsburgh.
They're going to restart.
Yeah, they're restarting.
But they haven't been.
No, they haven't been. But I'm just saying it's going to be. They're in Pittsburgh for a reason, and I think there are two reasons for that. This is life and death for Uber. Uber's business model is based on autonomous driving.
Well, I think they've used up everybody's patience too.
Yeah,
they're not really allowed. I don't think they can have more incidents and get away with it.
But they have to take this business model everywhere, and not just. Not just in the on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, but remember, you know, Toyota's just this year signed up with Uber. I found that a fascinating development because Toyota had its own in-house AV development program going. They're not the only ones testing in Pittsburgh, Uber. Aurora's there. There's another one, too, that I'm blanking out
Argo.
Argo is there. Thank you. So, it's the old analogy. We've talked about it on the show in the past. When cell phones first came out, you could only use them in business districts. That's where the cells were. Then you could use them at the airport. Then you could use them on the highway going from the business district to the airport. Now you can make a cell phone call anywhere. Same thing's going to happen with autonomy. It's going to take a couple of decades to roll it out. But the geofenced areas has already started.
Right. And I think the other, Gary mentions the Ammon thing. To me, the big piece of this GM announcement, which seems familiar, closing plants, making sure they're disciplined for the next recession. To me, the big announcement is we're putting lots of capital in autonomous. The future of our business is autonomous. We're putting Ammon,
electrification and autonomous.
Yeah, and that's big money. And so we're putting Ammon at Cruise. We're putting lots of capital into this because if we don't compete with the Waymos and Ubers of the world, we're just a hardware maker in the future. So I think when you have players in this space with the capital of GM, Apple, Waymo, these are the most capitalized companies on the planet.
Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota. I think this is coming faster than we think.
Yep.
Well, and the price is coming down on batteries. I saw something the other day. Somebody was speaking at, I think it was Stanford, and the price per kilowatt hour is about probably $145 to $125 a kilowatt hour now. So if you've got a 60 kilowatt hour battery.
Cell.
60 times $125.
Yeah, now let's talk pack, and you're still in the $200 range.
Right, so... They're saying that this guy at Stanford, though, he runs a company in China, the same company that bought a Nissan's battery division, and they're predicting $100 per kilowatt hour and 5 years. That's in 2020. And then 5 years from then, $50 a kilowatt hour. So you're starting to see at least projections of significant reduction in battery costs. And at that point, you start to get parity between IC, you know, propulsion and battery propulsion, because right now, as we've discussed, we're talking about a $65,000 vehicle right now. You know, Bolts are being sold at around $40,000, $35,000, depending on whether you're getting incentives and things. I mean, what does an electric vehicle really cost? the price is going to come down. But right now, if you look at the ones that have been launched recently, I mean, whether it's the Jag I-Pace or the new Audi e-tron, they're $70,000, they're $80,000.
Right.
That's where people make money building electric vehicles. They're not making money or much money at all at $35,000 or $40,000.
They're not making any. I believe you have to charge at least $50,000.
I agree, John.
To make a profit.
Probably.
And anything below that is losing money.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, to your point, Henry, you were saying earlier that what the average price of a new car is what?
35.
Okay, 35. ATP. So it's not that far from that. You know, I mean, that's the average price of a car.
Yeah. Right. I think the...
Yeah, but we should talk the mean, not the average.
Yeah.
Because well, the trucks have been pushing that number up, too.
Well, right. They have, but what I'm getting at is it's not like 36,000 is the middle of the market in terms of the number of vehicles being sold. It's probably like 85% at 35,000 or below, and another 15% above that.
Yeah.
We should point out this is 18,650 of those were sold in November, which is a record.
It's by far and away the best-selling luxury vehicle right now.
Yeah, isn't that astonishing?
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, as the incentive goes away, will that number stay up there?
Yeah. That's
And to your earlier point, those huge numbers of people that that have put their names on that list, they're looking for a $35,000 or $40,000 car. Is Tesla actually willing to sell them a car at that price?
Yeah, plus the $7,500 tax. But I think the bigger ceiling is the electric piece. I mean, I've got lots of cars. This is a toy to me. I mean, for people who depend on their car every day, you gotta center your life around the car when it's an electric car. It's the range anxiety is a serious issue. So I think the electrification discussion is more interesting than the autonomous space, where you're running the cars on predicted routes, taking them all back to a nest. I think electrification for passenger cars is still very much in doubt. But in the autonomous space, again, that's expensive. You're going to be making all these little pods. But if you're an OEM, you can also meet your government regulations as you bring autonomous EVs to market. So
regulations.
I was going to say, unless the regulations change.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these mandates. So you can kill two birds with one stone. So I think that's where the EVs are more interesting.
Okay, we got a lot more to talk about, but we've got to take another quick commercial break right now because we've got to give a great shout out to our friends at Bridgestone.
Woo! Let's do this!
The U.S. bobsled team is helping Bridgestone demonstrate how our tires
go
come through in the clutch.
Hang on. Left.
Bridgestone's Dual Lenza Plus tires give you all-season performance for up to 80,000 miles.
Right.
They're engineered to handle wet roads.
Right.
And winter conditions. Just like the pros, right?
Tim, less talking, more leaning.
Right. Oops. Did it again.
Okay, we're back talking all things automotive. You got something else on your?
Well, I got plenty of things here. We go all day with this sort of stuff, but you know, before we get away from prices, this is a little off, but this is sort of an interesting thing talking about like going forward in terms of affordability of things and people being able to buy things, and this number just floored me. So there's an outfit called Apartment List, and they surveyed 6,400 millennials about whether they want to buy a house or not. Okay, so these are people who rent. 89% of their renters say they plan to purchase a home at some point in the future. Okay, here's the kicker part that I just was astonished by. According to this Apartment List, of those millennial renters who plan to purchase a home, 48% have zero down payment savings.
Oof.
Okay, so here's my question. If you have cars that are costing a median...
36, well, oh, the median...
Well, whatever
it is.
But whatever number you throw out there, I mean... If they have zero for a down payment to buy a house, what's this going to do to car sales going forward?
Well, they don't
Jeff,
have a down
payment. Jeff, you're shaking your head. Say something. We're on TV.
I think we've got a problem. We've got a situation where people, we've got an affordability problem, for sure.
I mean, how does this get addressed?
Well, there's a suggestion that cars are going to make a comeback. Affordable cars.
So cars, not crossover cars?
Exactly. You know, $25,000 cars, you know, cruises and things like that. It's interesting.
Well, not cruises, but.
Well, it's interesting, you know, given that some of the domestics are getting out of the car business. I mean, how do you create an affordable crossover? I mean, you know, even the subcompacts, you know, they can be $25,000 or $30,000 for a subcompact.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there is an affordability problem.
No,
we're starting to hit a wall.
Here's what I see going on is that all the growth in car sales this year has come from millennials, all of it. And by 2020, millennials will be the largest group of population buying new cars. So there are millennials with money out there and they're buying them. The problem for the industry is this has been an ongoing problem, is that we've been pricing people out of the new car market for decades now. There are now 45 million more people living in the United States than there were in the year 2000. We sold 17.4 million cars in the year 2000. We're going to sell 17.4 million this year. We're selling the same number of cars, even though the population of the country has gone up by an entire California.
But it used to be 3 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years now on a...
You mean for loans?
For a loan. Jeez. Yeah. So, I mean, you're selling the same number of cars. Maybe the monthly payment's staying the same, but you're paying for the car for 10 years.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is this is not a new issue. This has been built. In fact, I can tell you, the peak where the largest percentage of Americans went out and bought a new car was 1978. And it's been going down since then.
Is it because cars are getting more reliable
That's a huge part of it. We can keep these cars a lot longer. But the big problem is that for middle America, their incomes have flatlined now for several decades. Meanwhile, the price of cars has continued to go up. We've just priced them out of the market. So when we talk about all this new technology and coming in and driving up prices, it's exacerbating a problem that's been going on for a couple of decades.
Well, so
and hence Lyft, and hence
right. Yeah. Well, and that's true if you're urban. Yeah, I mean, I have a son in Seattle who doesn't own a car because he can get along round fine on.
Are you sure he's your son?
Uber. yeah, I know. I tell you, we get to race weekends, and he's starved. He's starved to get behind the wheel.
The last time he beat you, that we had you on the show, and he said your son beat you.
He's quick. Yeah, imagine if he drove every day, he'd be even quicker.
Not in Seattle.
Right, but with the big three all getting out of sedans. My favorite example is Ford is now going to go from a Ford Fiesta, which starts at $17,000. Their entry-level car is going to be a $22,000 Ford EcoSport. Does that mean that they lose entry-level customers? Yes. All those customers are going to go buy a Honda Fit?
There are customers out there, right? Going to some other manufacturer or buying used.
Right, or are they going to buy a used Ford EcoSport? I mean, how is the used car market getting more robust?
Well, it is because these cars last longer too, right?
Look, even though I said fewer percentages of the population is buying new cars, they're still buying cars.
Right.
And they're buying used. And that comes back to your point, Henry. Things are lasting a lot longer. And that's where they've all gone. You know, the car park in the United States is really growing. We're building cars faster than we're scrapping them.
So, John, yesterday you interviewed the president of Toyota, Jim Lenz. What did you learn?
I'll tell you one thing that I thought was extraordinary, what he said, in all this talk of going into mobility services. You know, GM's got Cruise, and they're probably going to do a ride-hailing service with it. Ford's doing Chariot. You know, I think Volkswagen is what? Get Car. And
Honda threw in with GM, right?
Right. Jim Lentz said, we're not going to go into mobility services without our dealers. Dealers are our partners. And, you know, it makes all the sense in the world.
Those vehicles still need to be maintained.
Not only that, to that point, dealers are in every single community. Not every, but you know what I mean. They're everywhere. They have got acres of land where these ride-hailing cars can park at night when nobody's using them. They've got all kinds of service bays to keep them up and running. And what I find extraordinary is other automakers will pay lip service to their dealer body. If they're at NADA or if they're standing around with dealers, they'll say, dealers are our partners. Toyota's the only one that consistently says, dealers are our partners. And as we go into this new world of mobility, they're going to be part of it.
So he said it on a stage at the Economic Club of Detroit. So there were people who... It mattered.
I mean, you know, that's where the profitability today is at dealerships. It's not in new car sales. There's some margin in the used vehicles if you're doing that. But really where they make the big bucks is the back of the shop where they fix cars. That's where the profits are rolling in and continue to roll in, particularly as you fix these more sophisticated systems like the sensors on your Tesla. I mean, yeah. I wonder what that'll cost.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you need
hopefully it's under
a better trained workforce.
Yeah, you just need a rubber mallet.
Well, and Toyota's, so we get Waymo now, today, yesterday. GM comes in San Francisco next week. Did Lenz talk about 2020, that's supposed to be Toyota's big splash at the Olympics, right?
At the Olympics. He talked a little bit about that, you know, that that's a very important thing. But remember, he's CEO of Toyota North America, so and it was at the Detroit Economic Club, so the focus was really what's going on with Toyota in this country, not so much on a global basis.
Well, and to that point, I find it fascinating that Toyota, along with its Japanese competitors, have all introduced new compacts into this market in the last 2 years. Saw all new Corollas in L.A. They see that market as key to getting new customers into the brand.
He talked about that. Yeah, they're committed to sticking with cars. But he recognizes those sales are going down. And, you know, they've got this new plant coming on stream that they're going to share with Mazda that's supposedly going to build Corollas. They're going to fill two plants with Corollas? I don't think so. In fact, I'm really puzzled why they're even building a new plant. That's their problem.
Would it be a Mazda 3 and the Corolla being built on the same?
Probably. Wow. They haven't said what it's going to be. But
There's got to be a lot of interaction between those two companies in terms of hard points for location points for the line and everything. I mean,
but wasn't the focus in the Model 3 once upon a time those two shared a platform?
Yeah, they did.
So
yeah,
that Mazda sounds 3. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
When
so,
Ford owned Mazda.
But Ford owned, what was it, 30-some percent of it?
Yeah, but, you know, in Japanese financial whatever, once you get about 33% of the company stock, you essentially can control the company.
Right. Because I think that Toyota owns a piece of Mazda.
It does. It's like 15%.
So they're on their way.
Yeah, right. But, you know, Mazda recognizes it can't invest in electrification and autonomy and mobility.
The big partner was a real good idea.
Right.
Yeah. For all those things, autonomous, electrification, that company is still very much focused on conventional automobiles.
Right. But remember, too, Toyota sells Corollas all over the world.
Right.
And so, you know, you can do the basic engineering, and now you can do, you know, regional variations for meeting regulations and whatnot. So when you look at Corolla's, manufacturing footprint, it is ginormous.
So you amortize a lot of the costs, and therefore you're able to provide this at an affordable cost for the person who's coming into the dealership.
And this is the new architecture, that Toyota New Generation.
Yeah, TNGA.
Yeah. So, but my point was, Mazda 3 must share some, there must be some information sharing going back and forth if they're going to manufacturing them in the same, you know, facility.
Oh, you have to. There's no question. In fact, it's probably going to be a Toyota platform that Mazda does a top hat on, or vice versa. Or maybe they do something totally different and they optimize the plant so you can run Corollas and CX-5s down the line.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I know you guys would probably agree with me when I say a Corolla is very much a vanilla type of automobile, and Mazda is really trying to be the kind of tutti-frutti of automobile companies. They want to have that zoom-zoom thing.
Well, but the Corolla hatch, though, I mean, and you're a big fan of that car.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm telling you, that car is spectacularly well-engineered, the Corolla. Hmm. Yeah. And, you get in it, and it's basic, plain transportation, but, you know, to do a car, you know, to do a $70,000 car, it's kind of easy. You can spend a lot of money. You can buy the best materials. You can put all kinds of extra gussets and brackets and other things for damping in the chat. You can spend a lot of money. You can't spend that kind of money on a Corolla. So to get something that's very smooth, whisper quiet. I thought it had stop-start. I came to a stop, and I go, why is the tach at about 700? I can't hear anything.
Wow. No, I agree with you, John. I think it's harder to do an inexpensive car than an expensive car.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the level of sophistication, the number of people involved with, say, building, you know, a Rolls Royce versus, you know, look at somebody like General Motors or Toyota building all those small, affordable cars. And those plants, I mean, their capacities, they're 250,000 units a year. I mean, that's a very different model. And that's why If we can get back to your Tesla for a second, that's why it was such a big deal when they went from building Model X's and S's to the 3, because the volumes jumped so large. And I think that's why, you know, Elon had such a hard time kind of swallowing the Model 3. It was a whole different enterprise, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you got customers out there who won them yesterday. So you got to make your delivery schedules so your customers are happy, but also so you're generating profit to keep the.
And I mean the expectation.
I can't imagine that they expected to get 450,000 orders out of the box.
No.
You know, I mean it's.
It does show you what kind of demand might be out there. You know, for the right car.
Well, you know, Tesla smashed the paradigm.
Right.
You know, they made electric cars cool. They made people put down $1,000 and stand in line and wait for months and months and months to get it.
Yeah, even
nobody else is getting that. Nobody.
Well, think about the electric car paradigm prior to Tesla. It was sort of this sort of geeky science experiment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You kind of had to be out there on the edge somewhere, willing to wear a beanie copter kind of person versus somebody like Henry that enjoys driving and wants a car that's kind of dynamically capable. That's a very different kind of car.
So will the new generation, will the I-Pace do it? Will the e-tron do it? Will the iNext do it? Gary, what do you think?
I don't think so. I it goes back to Henry was saying it's like an Apple, right?
That's right.
So people are willing to sacrifice, pay more because it's something special.
Right.
Okay. And it almost seems to me that all of these others are basically like, okay, you're going to go out and buy a Hewlett-Packard computer. You're going to go out and buy a Dell computer. I mean, they're all good computers, okay? But basically, they don't have the same panache that the Apple does. And similarly, your Tesla, you'll probably save in your garage and pass down to your son, and he'll pass it down to his son, and somebody will make a whole lot of money off that because it'll be a collectible.
Right. Yeah, no, there's a brand identity there, and there's only one Apple. I mean, to your point, nobody's been able to replicate that in the computer space or the iPhone, the phone space. There's Apple and there's everybody else. And I must say, I mean, I drove a Jaguar I-Pace back to back with this car, and took it to a number of friends, and every single one of them said that Jaguar feels like a normal car. This is different.
Yeah,
the Jag's a lot heavier too, though. I think it's like 4,900 pounds. I mean, it's a lot heavier.
Not only that.
It's an off-road, sort of a crossover off-road vehicle, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but it still feels like
different than a sedan.
Right. But it's the same size weight as a Model S. But you get into it, and it feels like a Jaguar. And if you're a Jaguar buyer, what is the brand? Is it electric? Or is it a V8 growling, F-type? You know, I think whereas this brand, you know what this brand is. It's an electric performance brand. Those other brands all have other identities already. So I'm not sure EV translates.
I totally agree with you guys. I think they're going to run into a world of problems. They'll sell some cars. We'll see them out on the street. But again, remember, this is all a business. Can they make money on these cars?
So John, are you including Audi in that and Porsche in that?
I am. Porsche,
you think there's
going to
be resistance?
No,
to those
I think
brands?
Porsche I haven't driven.
I think they're more like Tesla, frankly.
Porsche?
Porsche. High tech, performance,
Correct.
Dynamic.
Yeah, no, I think Porsche will be fine.
And by the way, the buyer is willing to swallow a $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 price tag. I mean, the new 911's out. What's the base price on that car now? $112,000 for base 911?
Yeah.
Nice car, but wow.
Yeah. No, my feeling is that the iNext, the I-Pace, and what's the Mercedes one? The GLE?
No, isn't that a Mazda too?
Whatever. Already forgotten.
Yeah.
But it isn't even out yet.
Right.
That's right.
I think they're going to run into trouble.
It's the right
fast.
Body style, though. The Mercedes is it's a crossover. I think
such
is intelligent.
Bland styling.
I almost feel like that's intentional. It's they wanted to do something conventional in shape because again, the paradigm traditionally has been these sort of science experiment or odd looking vehicles. And I think people want conventional shape, but they love the power, the smoothness, the substance, the low CG that Henry's talked about in the Tesla.
Yeah. I think let's not forget there are other brands that are going to be coming into the space like Byton and Rivian. Maybe they establish themselves, because I think Porsche can pull it off because it's a tech brand, and Porsche is going to come out with a Taycan and say, we just set the fastest Nürburgring time with an electric car. You know, that's something that I don't know, very few other brands are going to be able to compete with. Whereas if you buy an Audi e-tron, the average customer, $40,000 again, is going to say, well, will it do my daily route as efficiently as an Audi Q5. That's a tough bar.
Stephen Henry, you know, to the point of Porsche, it just seems to me that, okay, they're going to sell that car to Porsche buyers.
Yeah.
Are they going to attract buyers from other brands?
Well, I'm not so sure. Who has Tesla been selling the S model to?
Not Tesla owners. Well, I mean...
No, they didn't exist previously. That's I'm saying they may have stolen some Porsche owners.
And BMW, Mercedes, and Audi.
And the German premium brands may be looking at Tesla and saying, oh, we're going to take some of those back.
All right. So I've got to apologize because I forgot to write down the source for this. But just this week, Porsche North American chief executive Klaus Zelmer said, quote, if you look at what Tesla has done, if you look at their volume and look at their price level, it's truly astonishing. If you can do that with one brand and a sales network that is not comprised of dealers in a real sales organization, it is even more astonishing.
It's a hell of a statement.
Right. I mean, so coming from the guy who's running Porsche in North America, and they were talking about the Taycan and things to come.
So the unsaid part of that was, and given our franchise system and our brand, what could we do if we provided exactly the same thing Tesla provides?
So Tesla right now is outselling Porsche in the United States 4X.
Right.
4X.
Yeah, with three
without
models.
Without the franchise.
With three models and no franchise.
And without
you
got
to go to Cleveland to get the damn thing.
You got to go to Cleveland. And it's a sedan, for goodness sakes. It's not even an SUV.
Right.
Wait till they come out with a model. What's the model?
Why? Yeah. Hey, look, we got to wrap it up. We've gone a little bit long here, but Henry Payne, thanks so much for coming on, especially for bringing your Model 3 and letting me drive it before we started the show.
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, I love to share my toys.
Yeah. Jack Keebler, great having you on the show, as always.
Good
having you here. And Gary, we got to keep on doing this.
Yeah, and Henry, when you go home, don't text.
I'll be careful.
Even though you can.
Good. Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.